perception that you have of other people being affected, all of the extraterrestrial contacts that have seemed to have a contact with the ETs have some things that are similar to them. I've been talking to Dr. Sprinkle, who's been doing another case where he's age regressed through hypnosis, over 100 people that have supposedly had contact, and he is coming up with some similarities in a substantial amount of them, and some things do affect them. Mm-hmm. Their retention, their fuzziness, or totally blank out their minds. My experience with hypnosis, when I was in college, I was doing a lot of hypnosis and age regression at that time, and we find out that the subconscious remembers everything, but it's a little irrational, so we can either lead it or it can lead us. So we have to find out what kind of record it's really playing. In other words, it could be skipping the grooves. The other information that you're talking about, whether you played the frequency out or not, probably does not have any bearing. It could be just an experience that happened, merely because of the frequencies that you're generating are at the audio level, and we're looking at frequencies that may or may not be frequencies that you can hear. And you can't record it with a little portable tape recorder.
Well, you recorded them off of KABC, and you can't get anything over 10,000 cycles off this radio station, no matter how you try. If you do, then the FCC would be very unhappy with it.
Yeah, what does UMO mean, by the way?
Well, the UMO is another planet, UMMO, and they're just like the Pleiadians.
Ah.
And they just happen to be, they picked Spain, for instance, to be another contact. And they have been in contact with several people over there, and they contacted really funny over there. They wrote them all letters. And they all had a stamp. And it appears then after they got through writing letters, and I don't know who, you know, dropped them in the postmark, but then they were in direct communication with a couple of people and very technical information.
I know the Azores, which is a Spanish island off in the Atlantic, seem to have a lot of UFO sightings. Do you know anything about that? Or it's supposed to be because it was once part of Atlantis.
I'm not familiar with those sightings indirectly because I've been working with other ones that are going on, but there seems to be no place that we're aware of that does not have sightings of people that allow themselves to have the sightings. It seems to be once you allow this to happen or raise your frequency of yourself, they appear.
Well, the Soviets are talking about rather openly now in their press UFO sightings. We have senators who are now talking about it, and ex-senators, they have seen them.
Well, it's real funny because I just went to Peking or Beijing this last year, and I brought over a couple of the copies of the UFO contact book, and we were to bring them to in Peking to let some people look at it. The guide, I mentioned that I wanted to make sure I got a copy of this to people in charge, and he just happened to be on the magazine that you can get on any stand on UFOs anywhere in China, because they're avidly in it. And we are currently having a book come out next week, which is UFOs Over China, which has about 500 and some pages of UFO sightings in China itself. So they're very much involved in it.
And you say you have 10 books right now that are out that are different cases. Can you tick them off for us here real fast?
Well, I don't have all the names of them right now. I think it would probably be easier for us to send a list of each one. Because each one of them goes into a different type of a species of contact that comes into them. For instance, a contact from the Iarga is one from people that are aquatic, so to speak. And they look like us. It seems genetically they all have two arms, two legs, and two eyes, and two ears, you know, and this type of thing. But maybe the development of their planet was more aquatic, or maybe it was a different base. Like, we're base as a carbon base.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe theirs was a silicon base. But they still end up having this for mobility and what have you. And it appears that we have books and investigation in collaboration with Wendell Stevens. We've been trying to get his information out for what it's, for the mm-hmm. information.
Put it on the table and let you...
Let you read it out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Edson, does that help you?
Thank you very much. And what was the address again in Colorado?
It's box 441335. And it's Aurora, Colorado, 80044.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll be in contact with you. Thank you very much.
All right, Ed, thank you.
Appreciate your call. You're on, Larry.
Oh, hello?
Yeah.
Oh, Bill?
Yes.
I listen to you on the news all the time. I just think you're great.
Thank you.
But I was going to tell you, I had a sighting about, I think it was in 1974, I was watching The Music Man, And I went over to go get a Coca-Cola at the store, and I happened to glance up, and there it was.
And
I just couldn't believe it. It came down like a shooting star.
Did you see the craft itself or just lights?
Well, it came down like a burning star, only it took a right angle. You know, like they always say, a right angle. It didn't stop. You know, it didn't burn out. It just shifted.
Yeah.
And I thought, dear God, that's a little bit strange.
Yeah, they are strange to see those things. And this was when, in 1944?
In about 1974.
Oh, just within the last 10 years or so here in L.A.?
Yeah. I just happened to go out the backyard, and I was going over to the store to get a Coke.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that with us, Larry. We've had reports of a lot of people here in the Los Angeles area seeing them. I haven't been able to see one myself.
Well, I thought, I was talking to your girl that screens, mm-hmm. and she was telling me that she had a sighting off of marine lamp.
Well, I'm going to have to put her on, too, and find out what that's about.
Well, you know, a lot of people are just, skittish about, coming out and saying, they've actually seen these things.
Well, get out of the closet.
But they are real.
Yeah, they are. Okay, thank you very much, Larry. Appreciate it very much.
Okay.
We'll be back. In just a moment, I'm Bill Jenkins.
Hello. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great.
Well, it's the first time I've turned into your radio station, and I'm glad I did.
Where have you been, Richard?
Hiding out in Hollywood.
We've been here for 25 years doing this.
Well, I haven't been in town that long, I guess. Either that or I just like to remain ignorant. First off, I'd just like to say that your show is certainly breaking bold ground by airing this subject and a lot of other subjects. It sounds as if you've really put forth some amazing programming.
Thank you. We have. At least that's what people tell us. Except the program director, he looks at me funny every now and then, but it's still here and we're doing our thing.
Well, I'm going to listen from now on. Now, my question for Mr. Green is, what type of resistance has he run into through different government bureaus or agencies, things like that, the media in general? Why is it, or in your opinion, why does it seem that so many people are reluctant to advertise and publicize these events?
Actually, I've never run across anything that's been like that. When I was in the service, of course, I was assigned to a secret area, and I just was not allowed to talk about anything that I had for that area. Currently, I find that most people are not willing to talk about things because of their fear. The next thing that I find in all of this whole area of UFOs is the economics behind it. And economics are one of the big situations that keeps a lot of this information going out. It's great for some of the rags magazines that you're looking at, but for generally
and open mind,
and well, maybe for open mind too. But look at the general people that are doing the investigations right now. The Center for UFO Studies in Phoenix, for instance, with Dr. Hynek, total income is $1,000 a month, and that pays the phone, the salaries of three people. And now that doesn't do anything. And we find out that the same is true with the rest of the organizations throughout the United States. And if you were to get involved with putting out the information, it's always the lack of capital. And that was the same problem with the Genesis Group when they first investigated the problem, was the lack of capital to get out, a very highly technical investigation of the information. They did the best they could. They got everybody going. And they did do a good job for what they had available. And that's what we have to go on. At this point, there's no mass amount of money available, let's say from the private sector or public sector, either one, or sections, that will allow some investigations. And everybody says, yeah, well, I'd like to know more about it. It really doesn't do too much. We find out that the people are curious, but will you put your money there?
Well, I've always maintained since I've been doing this show, Richard, for many years now, that the time is long past for the so-called UFO groups. This is just absolutely the wrong thing to do. But we do have something that is going on that is of enormous importance. And really, the vehicle that should be done is major media.
Mm-hmm.
It was very disappointing, for instance, a year ago last summer when the Brewster incident happened. I don't know if you're familiar with Brewster, but for many nights during the summer, these lights kept coming over the area at night. This is in upper New York State.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people saw them. Tens of thousands of people saw them. They had mass meetings up there. Television networks even sent cameras up there. ABC did broadcast pictures of them on a couple of their newscasts. But it's amazing how, as fascinating as that story would be, and how obviously these giant lights in the sky that were structured perfectly, it couldn't be anything else, not even little airplanes flying around at night trying to hoax the folks. And the studies that went on, nobody really raised the flag. ABC, NBC, CBS, the legitimate news agencies that could have done something very big with this, that could have gotten into an investigation, find out what the government was saying, they weren't saying anything, although they were certainly out there looking. Why? And this is not the first time it happened. It's the second time it's happened. It'll probably happen again up at Bristol.
Is it possible that it's backlash from Orson Welles' War of the Worlds?
I had a hard time buying that.
Well, when it was broadcast, people panicked. Well,
that was in 1938, and people were a lot older than that. I think in the beginning, perhaps, that we had to deal with the War of the Worlds syndrome, but that was the only data that those in government had to deal with. If we tell the people about the flying saucers, what we really know, and this goes back into the time of Harry Truman, the only data they had was that there might have been mass hysteria.
Right.
But I have a great deal more confidence in the people of the United States than that. I don't think you'd get hysterical if you found out that there indeed were extraterrestrials flying around over our city, would you?
Well, apparently people are saying there are, and I'm not in much of an uproar about it. I don't think it, but it's more of just a curiosity. I would welcome the opportunity to see it firsthand. Another question I have for Mr. Green is that oftentimes the photographs we see as the public in books and things are very sketchy, very unclear, not precise photographs. And knowing optics and things nowadays, I don't understand. Have you yourself seen clear photographs? Is the public, do we have access to things that don't seem fraudulent? You know, the photographs look, yeah, that looks real. It doesn't look like a frisbee out of focus.
The contact book that we have called UFO Contact in the Pleiades contains a tremendous amount of clear photographs. It's like as close as your automobile and very detailed. And again, you can order that from us.
And those photographs have been subjected to an enormous amount of testing to see if they are real. Even down to testing the emulsion layers, testing the shadows, the blur images on them, all kinds of things.
It was interesting that Billy's mission, again, was to give to the people the clearest and the most quantity of pictures that we have, and they actually posed the craft to allow him to take these pictures. Remember, Billy is a one-armed man.
Right.
And so he had to set his camera and cameras in motion to take these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that some of them are blurred because they moved. And I have a collection of, say, 500 pictures.
Hmm.
And you can get the videotapes of the moving pictures that were
get videos from Genesis of this particular case. And I, like I say, I have over 500 pictures of other ones.
Fabulous.
All right, Richard. Thank you for a good question.
Thank you very much.
I hope you stay with us now.
I will.
Now that you've found KUBC, stay aboard.
Okay.
That's hour one of Open Mind tonight. We have 2 hours to go. Our guest is...
Well, primarily because they can walk among us. They don't look too much different than we do. And so they don't like that. But they did, when you're looking at Ascot, there's a couple other pictures that he does have available that you can get. The ones that were interesting to me are ones with Semyasi when she was holding... She has a laser gun in the picture, a couple of them.
Oh, yeah?
And Billy was playing around with the laser gun, shooting holes in the tree and shooting off limbs. And, of course, we were sitting there looking at the tree that's right outside of his house with a perfectly round hole that is burned on both sides. And right now it's, you know, a few years old, anyway. You can tell that we didn't do it.
Why are the pictures of them so rare, though?
Well, because they don't want to be seen walking down the street. If the picture got out and all of a sudden you recognize them, they didn't want to do that. At this point, they don't care because Semyasi's not around anymore.
Yeah.
So she's gone. The communication that Billy has right now is with Semyasi's father, Quetzal.
Oh.
Ascot is not from Pleiades either.
No, Ascot is from the Dal universe. The next universe over, and when Billy was taken to the next universe, he was talking about like a cell, a circular cell. He got like a bump going into the next universe, and that's where the Dals were.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of life exists in the Dal universe? Do we know much about it?
Well, not only what Billy says back again, that they have advanced again farther and farther ahead than we do. For instance, let's go to the Pleiadians. The Pleiadians tell us that they have three planets that they live on in that system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 25 billion of them, which is quite a few. And they're out going through the system, checking on all kinds of life in different areas. They even took Billy to a planet that was prehistoric times like us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why they carried this laser weapon we're talking about as a defensive weapon, not as an offensive weapon. And just to protect themselves as they make their skirmishes, because they may be eaten alive or something on these expeditions that they take off on.
I imagine they carry that as they walk around on planet Earth. a great deal. But you've got Volume 1, Volume 2. That's a good start on the pictures that come from Billy Meyer. He has others that you can get from him. You have that address over at the tip of your tongue there, George?
Yeah, it's you can write to Billy Meyer direct at 8466 Hinter, H-I-N-T-E-R-S-C-H-M-I-D-R-U-T-I. That's Hinter Schmidt-Rudy, and it's Z-H, which stands for Zurich, Switzerland. And if you do write to him, send him a couple dollars, because they don't have any money, and they'll have to, pay the stamps and everything else. And they'll send you a list of the pictures that are available.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
And be patient, because the mail is slow between here and Switzerland.
There's about three people over there that will translate the English to German, and then Billy will read them, and then they translate it back to English and send you back the information. But you can get it, and you will get the information.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, John. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much. And we have... Ernie on the line. Hi.
Hi. Listen, I was wondering what the chances are of becoming or being a discrete contact and how you can improve the likelihood. So I'm moving up to the Table Mountain area in Northern California, which is a perfect place for that kind of a contact.
They contact the people they want to contact. I think it's a question then of letting your mind be open to that. Open and receptive to that.
Yeah, well, I meditate with my crystal cluster and trying to project out my interest and intent. And I don't know if that's a practical thing to do to make such contact, but I try.
You know, that's a very strange thing. It's hard for us to know just exactly what their criteria is. They don't think the way we do at all. And we're not about to shape the way they think. And the people they contact are... I would suspect, and I believe somewhere along the way, Wendell told me of people that they studied for a long time, vertically, over a period of years, and determining whether this would be someone that, A, they could communicate with, and if he had the probability of being able to get the word out.
Some they just go and take, and they'll go ahead and do the... observation. I think it... This time we have Wendell going to come in, and I think we should have Wendell come on and talk to us all, too.
Wendell?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Bill?
Wendell Stevens, welcome back to Open Mind. It's
hi, Wendell.
Good to hear your voice.
Nice to be with you again.
Ernie just put a question to us, Wendell, and I don't know of anyone who can answer it better than you can.
All right.
He's going to move up into a remote area in the tabletop country, and what can he do to improve his chances of being a contact?
Well, I don't know of anybody who has set out to be a contact that became one.
It seems
like they have another way of selecting, and what I'm finding in a number of contactee cases is that there is some relationship from past history with the contactee, and it's difficult to know what that is until the contact is open.
How about going through an age regression?
I'm not sure how you would identify whether you were going to be one or not. I just don't know how you open one.
I think, Ernie, the best trick is to forget it.
Yeah.
And if it's going to happen, it'll happen.
Yeah.
Have good thoughts and be open for the idea, but carry on.
Well, that certainly
you can be receptive, and maybe it will happen, but I don't know of any case where one has set out to do that and accomplished it.
Well, thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. See you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, sir.
Wendell.
Yeah.
Your research is continuing to go on at full speed. What are some... startling things you have for us?
Well, some interesting things have come to my attention in the last few years here. There are other Pleiadian contacts going on. And the most interesting thing is they started all about the same time. The contacts going on in Bogota, Colombia, even today, started in 1973. They reached a kind of a peak in frequency in about 1977 and 78, which kind of coincides with the things that were happening in Switzerland. there's another set of contacts going on down near Acaya, Peru, that began in July of 1974. And, of course, you know the Pleiadian contacts in Switzerland began in January of 1975. Those reached a crescendo of contact activity about 1977 and 78. There's another set of contacts going on the north coast of Venezuela at Tocuyo. Those began in mid-1975, just a little bit after the contacts in Switzerland, and they reached a peak in about 1979. All of these are still going on a limited basis. All of them are mentioning similar philosophies. They all say that they come from the Pleiades. They all are humans, just like we are. They all claim some relationship with our past history. There's a lot of similarities here, and there's no evidence that any of these contactees were aware of any of the others at the time these things were going on. Of course, now they are aware.
Do they all come from the planet Era or some of the other...
No, they all come from different parts of the Pleiades.
Mm-hmm.
And they all do mention that there are other inhabited planets in the Pleiades, and that what we see of the Pleiades is an oversimplified view of a very complex system of astral bodies.
Is there any reason why Earth seems to be of such great interest to the different societies that
exist in Pleiades? Well, the human creatures coming here from other planets seem to have some past relationship with Earth humans. And there seems to have been a variety of visitations here in the ancient past history several times over, leaving survivors after they left each time, usually in a cataclysmic change. And they seem to be coming back to those. Now, all of those that are coming here have been here before, in other times in the past, and probably will be back again in the future.
To bring us a little more up to date, I understand from your daughter, Cece, that there was another flap over Tucson yesterday.
I haven't heard anything of that.
Well,
that's a new one on me.
She hadn't communicated with you yet, but
no.
We're going to try to get her on, and she was going to do some investigative work. A number of people saw it, about 60 of them.
I'm anxious to find out what that is now.
Because it's evidently quite similar to the event of a couple of months ago. What happened then?
A couple of months ago, we had four formations of 15 craft that flew over town. They were circular vehicles with a large white light in the bottom. The helicopter pilot, a police helicopter, got up close enough to see structure form behind the light, but he couldn't catch up to them. They were faster than his airplane.
Yeah, particularly if he was in a helicopter, but I understand thousands of people in Tucson saw them.
Yes, that was the word we had, that there were literally thousands that observed them in the four flights that passed over, about 15 each.
Now, you would think that that would be a major story all over the country, wouldn't
it? Well, I think these things are suppressed, Bill. It was a major story here for one day, and then the police helicopter pilot was warned not to discuss it. The newspapers didn't report any more on it. The radar station at the military airbase here tracked them. They never did identify them. Their tape was confiscated by Washington and flown away. They were told not to discuss them. A lot of activity took place and nothing got in the media.
Except here and in Tucson.
Yes.
And I think a little bit up in Phoenix.
Yes. There was also a sighting out there in Burbank in your area. I think it was either the next night or the following night, a similar sighting.
At about the time, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't hear anything about that in Los Angeles.
No, we didn't hear anything about that in Tucson here, and we never would have if it hadn't been one of the recipients, one of the observers, was known to us, and he called and reported it to Cece. She could tell you about that.
In fact,
you might be able to hook the man on tonight if you get a hold of Cece.
Okay. We're going to try to do something with Cece a little bit later on, but we were quite anxious to talk to you.
And
let you share your information with our audience. We have Ron on the line.
Oh, hey, great.
All right, Ron.
Hi, Bill.
Hi,
Mr. Green, Wendell.
See, there's another new thing. Well, it's not so new anymore. The latest trend in contactee cases seems to be a pattern of genetic experimentation. And basically this is taking place in Brazil, but it's happening in all countries. It just seems to be we're getting more information out of Brazil. One of the cases down there resulted in a hybrid female child that is now 5 years old and being brought back to visit her father, her Earth father. And this is only a culmination of several years of prior experimentation in several areas that we don't know the results of.
Interbreeding going on?
Yeah, in some cases it's direct, and in some cases it's done artificially under laboratory conditions. But in one case, they told the witness that they had successfully produced 81 hybrid creatures with Earth's parents. In this case, we're aware of one living one that is healthy and growing well. There are a number of other cases where no progress was reported to the witness.
Okay, Ron, what was your question for Wendell or George Green?
Yeah, Bill, I was getting back to the Tucson sightings and in general all sightings. Mr. Green had mentioned earlier in the show that they have the power to control our mind not to see, say, their station out in Tucson. But why would they let us see them flying over the city when they leave or coming in?
Asking is to speculate on how they think, and I don't know why they would allow themselves to be seen. I'm quite sure that they can easily overfly the city and never be seen.
Right. And take photos, but you can't see the ships on the ground. But mm-hmm. And I have sighted them myself years ago, but I was curious about that.
Well, it is puzzling because all the ships in the formation were seen, and that's a sizable formation, 15 ships.
But if they land in the desert, you can't see them, right? If they can control their mind not to see the station.
I don't know of any case that they landed here recently. I investigated a case several years ago where one landed near a farmhouse southwest of town here. The farmer shot at it with a 30-30 rifle from fairly close range. It flew a little ways, then landed in the desert. Dust roiled up around it. Beacons flashed. And then it took off and flew away again. But there were a number of witnesses at the ranch. There was at least 15 witnesses to that. That's the only one I know of here that landed on the ground.
Yeah, I was curious because if they have that power, why do they let themselves be seen at times and not others?
Well, there has to be a reason for it, because in most cases, I would say that they have control of the visibility.
Right. Okay.
Well, you know, they're people too. Someone may have forgot to flip a switch.
Right.
All right, Ron. Thank
okay,
you
thanks, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
See you, Ron.
Karen.
Hi.
You're on.
Hi. I have a couple of questions for you. I just turned on the radio tonight, and I heard this, and I have never heard any of this stuff before. I mean, I believe that there's life in out there someplace. What I'm curious about is, why do you think Washington or the Air Force or whoever doesn't allow the media to report these events, like, on a national level instead of locally, where it's treated like it's some kind of a joke or mass hysteria or something like that?
Well, I want you to rephrase that. It's not that Washington doesn't, has control over the media saying, you can't do this.
Right.
The control comes in getting valid information that media would feel comfortable with handling. Now, as to why that happens, Wendell, you were into that more than any of us.
I'd have to agree with you. They don't order it not to be reported. They just kind of discourage reporting by withholding facts.
Mm-hmm.
The facts that they have, which is always more than the facts that we have.
Well,
I suspect that it has something to do with our own research projects and trying not to discourage attention and speculation on what we might be trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question. And does most of the information that we receive on these people come from basically through private citizens, or is there any, like, organizations that are in contact with them that they contact? Or?
Yes, I would say that almost all of the information that you hear publicly comes from private individuals that got into the hands of a media reporter who did what he could with it, with the facts available, never enough to really support anything.
Mm-hmm.
And with no government support, and usually with discouraging responses to any questions asked.
So there is, like you were saying, there's no money, no tax dollars, no anything that goes into a fund to investigate this stuff through, I don't know, NASA or whatever?
Well,
like
I'm sure that the government has a number of highly classified research projects going, but they're classified at levels that the public is not going to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty well established, Wendell, through the Freedom of Information documentation that we have seen, and Karen, for your information, that the taxpayer does spend hundreds of millions of dollars on investigating the UFO.
I would think so.
And unfortunately, we, the taxpayers, are not privy to the information that we're paying for.
Well, a lot of times, too, you're mentioning, I believe somebody was mentioned about Edwards Air Force Base. A lot of times, too, they don't even tell. I mean, my cousin was at Edwards Air Force Base for years, and he never knew anything about any kind of UFO, aircraft there or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was just really amazed when I was listening to this. What was the P.O. box where I can get more information on this? It was in Aurora, Colorado?
Yeah, 441-335.
Okay.
All right, Karen.
Thank you very
much.
Well,
I'm glad you tumbled in on us and stick with us tonight, will you?
Okay.
All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. We're talking about the reality of the UFO and the extraterrestrial on Open Mind. And we have on the line from Tucson, Arizona, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, who is one of the finest investigators trying to get the wheat from the chaff in these cases all over the world. We have in our studio George Green, a businessman and a very successful one, who donates a lot of his time and his wealth, too, in tracking down and getting the truth about the UFO and getting it into your hands. And we'll try to get more of that truth into your hands in just a moment.